As we come to chapter 9 of Genesis, and we introduced it last time we were together, in that we were talking about the Noahic covenant and the covenant that God made with Noah. I just want to read it real quickly in case you weren't here. I'm not going to spend a lot of time articulating on it because we're going to pick up in verse 18 tonight. But so God blessed Noah and his sons and said to them three things that we're instructed by God to do. Number one, be fruitful. Now, most people just think that means to procreate. I don't think that's what it means entirely. It means to have a full life. Have a life that really, the expressions of your life, the actions of your life, really are something that can really add to somebody else's life. I mean, who doesn't enjoy this season of the year when so many fine fruits are out there? So it's not just having an orange, it's being able to eat the orange and it, you know, enhances life. And so he says, first off, that we're called to be fruitful in our life. Now, we are called to multiply, okay, procreate, and to fill the earth, to inhabit and to really govern. And by the way, why do we need to fill the earth? Why does he say this? Because initially in Genesis chapter 1, as we went through that, you know, verses 26, 27, 28, 29 talks about how God made us in his image to govern, to rule, to reign, okay? Well, since the Lord had to deal with the planet and only 8 people made it, now it's time to repopulate the planet. But something different this time. What's that? Verse 2. We're really moving, aren't we? And the fear of you and the dread of you shall be on every beast of the earth and on every bird of the air, on all that move on the earth and all the fish of the sea. They are given into your hand. And the hunters said, amen. But think about this. It's a different approach. Before this, Adam, probably the smartest, or let me put it this way, the most used brain on the planet of a human being. Why do I say that? He named all the animals. Think about that. But at that time, there was no separation. There was no fear or dread between, you know, the dinosaur, the fire-breathing dragon that Job talks about, and Adam. They're hanging out together, okay? But then, after the flood, some things have changed. The order have changed. He says, but they are given to you. And then, my most favorite verse in the Old Testament is verse 3. And every moving thing that lives shall be what? Food for you. Can you imagine how boring life was before the flood? Salad, 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 salad. He says, I've given you all things, even as the green herbs. We've now expanded your diet. Go in and out. So, but, there's always a but there. You shall not eat flesh with its life. That's a good thing. Or the blood that's still in it. There's some dignity there, okay? Surely, why? It's a symbol. For your lifeblood, I will demand a reckoning. From the hand of every beast, I'll require it, and from the hand of man. From the hand of every man's brother, I'll require the life of man. So there's killing, and then there's murder. And God is an anti-murder, okay? Senseless killing. You know, one of the things that David was so mad about, and we're not there right now, but while I was gone, I went to one of my friend's churches, and he was teaching through 1 Kings. And so we popped up there, and we're worshiping up in Mount Shasta. But one of the things that David told his son, Solomon, is, listen, there's a couple of my guys on my staff I'm not happy with at all because of how they handled themselves during times of peace. Murder is not acceptable. There are times in war, it's terrible, it's tragic, it's horrible, where there's killing that takes place. But that's entirely different than what we're talking about here. Whoever sheds man's blood, by man his blood shall be shed, for in the image of God he made man. As for you, again, be fruitful, multiply, bring forth abundantly in the earth, and multiply in it. Then God spoke to Noah and to his sons with him, saying, I had to read this again. It's the section I wanted to get you to repeat. Listen to these words. As for me, behold, I establish my covenant with you and with your descendants after you. Did you note something? He didn't say, I want to make a contract with you. Why? Contracts can change. Contracts can be altered. A covenant cannot change. Why? God has made covenant. I will not change. You can trust what I have said and what I will do. And with I make covenant with you and with every living creature that is with you, the birds, the cattle, every beast of the air with you, and all that go out of the ark, every beast of the earth. You know, one of the things that I appreciate, and there's so many different teachings on creation, all these kind of things, but Ken Ham, some people really enjoy his teaching. Some people think his teaching is controversial. But one of the things that Ken Ham brings out is his biggest complaint is not how small the ark is, but why did God have him make it so big? Because people think, well, you got to have, you know, you got to have zebras and you got to have horses. No, it just says bring two of each kind, you know. So you didn't bring like a St. Bernard, a dachshund, a lab. He brought two dogs. And then over time, they've evolved into other species. And so if you really consider that, the number isn't as big as we'd like to think that it is, what God did. It's pretty amazing. But he says all these things. He says, listen, march the animals off. Thus I establish my covenant with you. Never again shall all flesh be cut off. Listen to this. Never again shall all... Now you got to read this slowly. Okay, someone might read this. Wait a second. I found an error in the Bible. We had Katrina a few years ago. No. Read it carefully. Never again shall all flesh be cut off by waters of the flood. And never again shall there be a flood to destroy the earth. We are going to have floods. We are going to have hurricanes. We are going to have tornadoes. We are going to have hail. As we read in Revelation, some big hail is coming, okay? But nothing like this. And God said, this is a sign of the covenant which I make between me and you and every living creature that is with you for perpetual generations. It's going to continue to go on and on and on and on and on. And just so you know, it's me. I love verse 13. I set my rainbow in the cloud. It shall be for the sign of the covenant between me and the earth. It shall be when I bring a cloud over the earth that the rainbow shall be seen in the cloud. And I will remember my covenant, which is between me and you, every living creature of all flesh. The water shall never again become a flood to destroy all flesh. Read it slowly. Now the rainbow shall be in the cloud, and I will look on it to remember the everlasting covenant between God and every living creature of all flesh that is on the earth. And God said to Noah, this is the sign of the covenant which I have established between me and all flesh that is on the earth. Beautiful picture, you know, and I think as we went through this, you know, one of the amazing things is Noah was building the ark for 120 years. It had never rained. There had never been rain on the earth. There's a thing called, we probably talked about, the canopy theory. And there's some thoughts about as we go on to Noah. I'll talk about it just if you want to watch. Some people think that may have affected what happened with Noah. But this was a new thing. Clouds, sun coming through the clouds, reflections of the precipitation in the clouds and rainbows. How many people love rainbows? Yeah. You know, when my son got married a couple weeks ago, it was in Oregon. You know what that means? It's going to rain. And of course it rained, you know, right before the wedding, you know, a little bit after the wedding. But about partway through the reception, this big rainbow showed up. I was looking for the pot of gold for her, my, you know, son's bride's daddy to pay for this, you know. But other people are going, wow, this is amazing. This is amazing. Yeah, it's just God. He says, you know what? I love rainbows at weddings because it just reminds people our God is a covenant keeper. That's why marriage is called, not marriage, it's not even called a wedding. Really, the biblical definition of marriage, you know what it is? It's from Malachi. It's a covenant of companionship. That's the biblical definition of marriage. It's in Malachi chapter 2, I think it is. A covenant of companionship. Not a contract, Now let's try these shoes on, see if it works for a couple of years, and then we'll do the real, boom, I'm covenant with you. And that's why I love at weddings when a rainbow shows up. It's kind of like God saying, this is a keeper. So, now, the sons of Noah who went out of the ark were Shem, Ham. You want to say something about Three Stooges, don't you? Just no. Shem, Ham, and Japheth. And Ham was the father of Canaan. That's an important verse there. From his line will come lots of problems until Jesus returns again. When we go to Israel, for years it was called the land of Canaan. And we'll see that there. But it was out of the line of Ham that, and I was thinking about this, and I'm not a language scholar. I don't know Hebrew. I don't know Greek. I know how to look up words and find out the meaning. But I thought it was interesting that Abram is from the line of Shem. We'll talk about that later on. But what's interesting to me is he spends most of his life in the land of Ham. And I don't believe this has any connection. Maybe it does. I've never studied it. But what's interesting, remember what Abram's name becomes? He goes from Abraham to what? Abraham. I think that, I don't, maybe do a study on that or see. I thought that was kind of interesting. Almost like God's grace, you know, God's mercy in the midst of all this, because these Hams really are a lot of, you know, they can't even eat ham over there, you know, let alone all this other. But Ham was the father of Canaan. Now these were the sons of Noah. And from these, the whole earth was populated. Do you realize you are sitting next to someone that's actually, this is kind of gross for some of you because you're married, your brother or your sister? Go way, way, way back. You know, we all came out of the same boat. We all got the same ship, you know. I remember years ago we were taking our kids and we were in New York and we went to the Statue of Liberty, which was really kind of cool because Robin has some ancestors that signed, you know, the thing. And so we were talking all about her relatives. And so finally they said, well, Dad, how come we don't know anything about your relatives? How did they get here? I said, well, they came in a Lucky Charms box. Because my relatives, my mom's side, are Irish. And my uncles, are like 4'11". They're like leprechauns, you know. So I said, we came over, they came over on a ship, we came over on the cereal. But anyways. So here we are. We all go back to the same boat, if we can put it that way. And so now that the flood waters have separated, things are being reestablished. Verse 20. So Noah began to be a farmer, and he planted a vineyard. Don't make this mistake of saying that he was the first farmer. It's not right. Really, who was the first farmer? Yeah, Cain, right? Isn't that why his brother killed him? Because of the offering. And then later on, over in chapter 5, I think it is, you know, Lamech also worked the land. And we're going to talk more about this on Sunday, so I don't want to spend too much time here. But so Noah's beginning to really, the word farmer means a man of soil, the rabbis call it. They call Noah the man of the soil, the man of the earth. And he planted a vineyard. Then he drank of the wine and was drunk and became uncovered in his tent. And we'll talk some more about this on Sunday. Some people say, well, the reason that this happened is before the flood and the way that the sun was treating things, that something happened after the flood, and that previous, before the flood, this is what they say, before the flood, people were not drunk. That sounds like a pretty good statement. It makes sense, right? You know, after, well, maybe they got drunk. No. That's not true. Well, how do you know? Because Jesus tells us in Matthew that in the days of Noah, people were what? Eating and drinking. He was talking about how wild things were. So there's all these, everyone's trying to help out the Bible. You know what I like to do? I just read the Bible. He got drunk. That's all I know. Okay? Well, maybe a little bit more. And he became uncovered in his tent. And Ham, the father of Canaan, saw the nakedness of his father, and he told his brothers outside. But Shem told Curly, no, but Shem and Japheth took a garment. They laid it on both their shoulders and went backward and covered the nakedness of their father. Their faces were turned away, and they did not see their father's nakedness. So Noah woke from his wine and knew that his younger son well, knew what his younger son had done to him. And then he said these words, which were really about to change history. Then he said, "Cursed be Canaan." Does that seem kind of interesting to you? Because we're told, especially when we get to like Ezekiel, talk about curses, and there's a lot of people that have these teachings about generational curses and all those things. And they, you know, there are some things that can be carried on unless you stop it, you know. But, you know, Ezekiel makes it very clear, you know, that God doesn't punish the son for the father's sin. Well, then why is he seemingly punishing this son for the father's sin? Well, the possibility might be, because I wasn't there, maybe some of you were, but maybe the problem was that Canaan was there with Daddy in the midst of all that. There's some thoughts on that. We'll talk a little bit about that on Sunday. We don't know for sure because we weren't there. But he said, "Cursed be Canaan, a servant of servants, and he shall be to his brethren." You know what he's saying? Ham, your son, Canaan, and his line is going to end up being servants to all the rest in time. What he's saying is, you're a problem, and you're going to be conquered over and over and over and over again. And the land of Canaan has been conquered just about by everybody, hasn't it? You look back history. Everybody wants to go to Israel. Everyone wants to come. It all goes back to this moment of whatever took place that night when Noah was drunk. And he said, Noah said, "Blessed be the Lord, the God of Shem." He's saying, "Blessed be Yahweh, your God, Shem. And may Canaan be his servant." He said, "You're going to serve the people of Shem. And may God enlarge Japheth." That's the other brother. "And may he dwell in the tents of Shem." And there's a little bit of a language thing here. In verse 27, there's some debate as to whether, see where it says, "and may he dwell." Some language people think the "he" there should be God. "And may God dwell in your tent," which is a possibility the way that it's written. But it also could be that there's an interaction between Japheth and Shem, that they would be united, okay? The same God, worshiping God. And we'll talk a little bit about that later on. "And may Canaan be his servants." Now, why do I say that little connection there? How many of you heard the word anti-Semitic? Anybody heard that word? All right. What does it mean? Anti what? Jewish. Okay, where do we get that? It's anti-Semitic. Okay, well, that's where we get it. The word Semitic comes from the tribe of Shem. And the Jews have come from the, which we'll see here in a little bit, come from Shem, which are known as Semites. Okay, so anti-Semite means you're anti-Jewish. Okay, and then we have Japheth. Okay, his line represents Gentiles that we'll see in just a few moments. But here's an interesting connection. You know what Noah prophesied? What Paul taught in Romans chapter 9, 10, and 11. That eventually the Jews and the Gentiles would become one. It goes all the way back here. That's why, gang, we study the Bible from Genesis to Revelation. This stuff isn't just stuff we're making up. It goes back to God's history for you and me, his love letter. And so Noah prophesied, look at verse 27, "May God enlarge Japheth, and may he dwell in the tents of Shem. May you become one, and may Canaan be his servant." Now Noah lived for after the flood 350 years. So all the days of Noah, were you ready for this? Could you imagine the birthday cake? I mean, you'd need, you know, these fire planes just to come by at the birthday party to dump a load. You know, so all the days of Noah were 950 years. And he died, yes. Now we come to this interesting chapter. Now, this is the genealogy of the sons of Noah. There's Shem. Now, why is he listed first? Interesting. And we'll go into this a little bit, and I'm going to butcher this a lot. But years ago, Ray Stedman, and you can go online, he's in heaven now, but gave a wonderful teaching on Genesis chapter 10. I would just go Google tonight, Google Ray Stedman, Genesis 10. You can get the whole message. You can read it, or you can listen to the audio if you're lazy like me. But he was giving some things that are interesting. Let me just read just a few things. Again, I've got his whole message here, but I'm not going to read all of it. But listen to what he says. We saw that Shem was given to the religious primacy of mankind. And what he's stating is these three sons have certain qualifications or qualities about them, I should say, that God gave them and that they exercised. For example, he says, we saw that Shem was given the religious primacy of mankind. The Semitic people, okay, people that came from the line of Shem, are responsible under God to develop the spiritual life of mankind. Now think about this. Isn't it interesting that the three world religions that are most prominent today, Judaism, Christianity, and you know, Islam or Muslim, you know, all came out of the line of Shem. And so what they had was, on their line, they had kind of this calling to lead the world in their spiritual pursuit, their pursuit of God. Okay? He goes on to say this. Then we have Ham. Okay? The line of Ham. They're given to the art of technical proficiency. The Hamitic people are the technicians of mankind, showing amazing adaptability to the world which they live. And if you were to go and research the line of Ham, most of the greatest inventions of mankind have come out of that line. Inventions on how to adapt without and with and all the... It's kind of interesting when you kind of look at these three areas, what God did. And then we have Japheth. Okay, and we'll talk about them in just a moment. So the people from the line of Japheth, and don't get too puffed up about this, but this is most of the people in the world. If you are not a Jew, you're more lined up. You're probably out of the line of Japheth. If you're from India to Europe, okay, most Americans were connected with Japheth. Okay, that's where we come. It's interesting. It says Japheth was given the intellectual enlargement, the widest geographical distribution of the three families. So they got more land than everybody else. But this is also where the Greeks came out of this line. What are the Greeks known for? Yeah, their wisdom, Plato, you know, all these kinds of things. And so it's rather interesting how this happens. And so, but Shem is listed first. Why? Because he's the most important to God. I think he has the greatest contribution to mankind. I mean, yes, it's good to be able to create things. Yes, it's good to have a great mind. But what's even better is to have eternal life with God. And that's what the Semites have given us through Jesus Christ. So we have the sons of Shem, Ham, and Japheth. And the sons were born to them after the flood. So now we've gotten off the ark. The sons of Japheth, they were Gomer, Magog, Madai, or Meda, the Medes, Javan, Tubal, Meshech, and Tyrus. Again, I'm going to throw a map up in just a moment. I've got three things I'll show you real quick. And then there's the sons of Gomer, you know, and then there's the sons of Javan. You know, you have places like Tarshish. Have you heard of Tarshish before? Saul from Tarshish, okay. You know, it's from this line that the Galatians, the Gauls, the Germans, but also the letters to Galatians ends up in the New Testament going to these areas. Look at what it says, verse 5. So from Japheth, all right, it says, from these, the coastland peoples of the Gentiles, okay, the non-Hebrew, okay, the coastland people of the Gentiles were separated into their lands. Now listen to what they did. Everyone according to his language, according to their families, and according to how they would govern their culture together, okay? So they were separated by language, families, and governing cultures, okay? That's how the Gentiles did it, all right? Now we have the sons of Cush. They were Seba, Havilah, Sabta, Rama, and so forth. Now verse 8. Now Cush, out of this line, Cush begot Nimrod, okay? Have you ever called Nimrod before? Oh, well, you dumb Nimrod, you know, what is that? Okay, Nimrod, he began to be a mighty one on the earth. He was a mighty hunter before the Lord. Therefore, it is said, like Nimrod, the mighty hunter before the Lord. What does that literally mean? Well, you study the language, and there's a couple of things. One is that he established as a ruler, one of their responsibilities is to protect their people from wild animals. So You know, even later on, and the Romans were ruling, you know, part of the thing was who's going to go after the big game, you know, all those kinds of things. That was kind of a king kind of a deal. But also, in the language, it also alludes to that he was a hunter of men. Not a good thing. And that God was watching because he was a man of war, not of good war. It was not good at all. And the beginning of his kingdom was Babel. Erech, Akkad, colony in the land of Shinar or Babylon. So he was the one that really set up urban communities. Before this, nomad people, agricultural, kind of following the animals, wherever the food is. And then he begins to put together this idea of, wait a second, let's come together and kind of live in community. And so he went, from that land, he went to Assyria. Okay, remember we heard about Assyria? He built Nineveh. Who went to Nineveh? Two people in the Bible focus on ministry in Nineveh. First guy got swallowed by a big fish. Not Pinocchio. What? Jonah, very good. And then later on, 150 years later, Nahum preaches. Remember, Jonah led that great revival, and then 150 years later, you know, they kind of blew it, and he says, well, you had 150 years to get it right. Now God's going to take care of it, okay? So here's the one that established all that. Rehoboth, Ur, Kala, and Rezin between Nineveh and Kala, that is the principal city. And then he establishes Egypt and all these other places, which we'll talk about in just a little bit. And also, from these people, from the tribe of Cush, come the Philistines, all right? Does that name sound familiar, okay? The idea of Philistines are water people, all right? You know, it's the Philistines mostly that hung out along the Mediterranean Sea. If you're looking at your map, you have, you know, there's Jerusalem. On the east side of Jerusalem is the Dead Sea, but on the west side is the Mediterranean. All on the Mediterranean Sea, the Philistines, they came up from Africa and also from Crete, some say, from the island of Crete, and kind of moved into that area, okay? Now we're just kind of seeing some of this stuff. All right. Then we finally come to Canaan, okay? He begot Sidon, two cities you often hear about in the Bible, the new Sidon and Tyre, remember on the coast there? You know, the big, you know, the wood to build the temple came from the king of Tyre, loved David here, you know, Hiram here have some of this stuff, and they shipped it down. We're going all the way back, okay? But here's some other names that should mean a little bit to you. Canaan begot Sidon, his firstborn, and Heth, and the, what? Jebusite. Who are the Jebusites? Well, Jebusite, this guy Jebusite, he finds himself living in a place called Salem, which today is called Jerusalem, okay? And he lived there, his family lived there, and nobody could conquer his family until David shows up. That's a long time. For the next 1,000 years, he establishes a place where I'm going to live, and nobody could conquer this place. And I think it's three times it says, and David hated not only this, but he hated the Hittites. Why did David hate, you know, he hated the Hittites? Well, the Hittites were known for their psychological warfare. And what the Hittites would do, sometimes they would purpose to blind people. Sometimes they would take blind people. Sometimes they fake blind people, okay? And they would put the Hittites on the walls because in those days, warriors were too superstitious to attack a city with the blind people. Do you see what the Jebusites would do? That's why it says that David hated the Hittites. It wasn't that he hated the people. He hated that kind of stuff. Isn't this cool? You know, 1,000 years before David gets around, we see where this kind of stuff all starts. So, we have the Jebusites, the Amorites, you've heard of them. The Girgashites, the Termites, the Flashlites, the Hivites, the Arkites. And do you see in verse 17 the word Sinite? There's a lot of people that have debated over the years, where do the people from China come from? Quite possibly, this is the word that describes China. It's a lot of language stuff, which I'm not going to get into detail. But don't worry, Jesus loves us, red and yellow, black and white. We're all precious in his sight. He's got us all covered, okay? All right, and Arvadite, the Zemarites, the Hamathites, and afterward the families of the Canaanites were dispersed. And the border of the Canaanites was from Sidon, as you go toward Gerar, as far as Gaza, then as you go toward Sodom, Gomorrah. Do those names sound familiar? Okay, those are kind of, if you're thinking in your brain, where's Sodom and Gomorrah? If you were to look on a map, look at the Dead Sea, okay, near the Dead Sea in Israel in that area, okay? Going from the Mediterranean Sea, Tyre and Sidon, up kind of the north of Israel, up near Lebanon, okay, all the way over to the Dead Sea, he's describing these areas, all right? Down south, as far as Gaza, boy, the Gaza Strip's been causing a lot of trouble for a whole time, huh? Goes all the way back to Genesis 10. From Gaza, then as you go towards Sodom and Gomorrah, Adma, which we'll read about in a couple of chapters, we get chapter 15, not tonight. Zeboam, as far as of Lasha, these were the sons of Ham, according to their families, according to their languages, and according to their lands and their nations. Have you noticed something here? They've caught on and saying, wow, we like the way the Gentiles are ordering things. Families, languages, governing. We're going to adopt that one. So they do that for a while. Now, the best part of the chapter. And also, children were born also to Shem, the father of all the children of Eber, or the father, literally, of the Hebrew people. The word Eber, some suggest that's where we get the word Hebrew, okay? So from the line of Shem, one of his sons was Eber, okay? What's interesting, really, we think about the father of our faith is who? Abraham. And he really is. He's six generations from Eber. You know what's cool about that? What you do today may have an impact six generations later. He's highlighted, yet his great-great-great-great-great-grandson is a reward of that. It's amazing. Have you ever met my father-in-law, Marv? Or actually, who hasn't? I mean, he's just da-da-da-da. My brother-in-law, Tom, did one of those genealogy things a few years ago. Not the Mormon church one, but the real one. We found out that Mars in the Civil War, great-great-great-great-grandfather, was known as an evangelist during the Civil War. And they found how you go on and read letters, you know. And really, my father-in-law has really become the fruit of the seed back in the Civil War. I mean, he can't stop but tell people about Jesus. You know, my twin nieces that are around here now, they'll be in the store and they'll say, Papa, that lady, I think she needs Jesus. Go tell her. And then, okay, well, you pray. And so my nieces, they're like 8 or 9, and they're praying, or 10, excuse me. No, they just turned 11. Anyways, they're praying. Well, Papa, isn't that cool, you know? And my father and mother are kind of that first generation that said, we're going to stop the drunkenness. We're going to stop the divorce. And Robin's parents are the same way. And so with my parents and Robin's parents, they've both been married over 50 years. There's no divorce in our immediate siblings and all these kinds. It just takes a generation. Somebody just stop and say, wait a second. Let's stand strong. Is it easy? No. No. Did you hear that gal recently at the Olympics? She said keeping her virginity has been harder than trying to make the Olympic team. She's a Christian, but she's speaking truth. But look at the repercussions. Because Eber said, I'm going to stand strong, God used his family to touch you tonight, to touch me tonight. Oh, that's cool. Anyways, a little sidetrack. So we have Eber, and he's the brother of Japheth, the elder. So the sons of Shem were Elam, Aphraxad, Lud, Aram. The sons of Aram were Uz. Aren't these great names? Uz. Hall. You know, Mom, I want you to be my husband. What's his name? Hall. Who are you? I'm brother Uz. Okay. That's okay. We got another brother named Mash. You know, medical, you know, what's that? Mobile Army Surgical Hospital. So we have Gether, we have Mash. And then Aphraxad, he begot or had Selah. And Selah begot Eber. So we're kind of getting down there. Then Eber, he had two sons, Peleg. By the way, if this is important to you, Peleg is the line that Jesus will eventually come through. So you want to follow that stuff through, you know. So kind of what I do, I don't know if you do, I mark my Bible up all the time. All the red, I don't know if you can see this, that's Jesus, that's Abraham. You know, I like to follow this stuff because I know about you, but I get confused. So Peleg was the one that leads us to Jesus eventually. But it goes all the way back, okay, to Noah and his sons. And Peleg, for in his days, the earth was divided. And this is what begins, the great divide begins to happen. There are the sons, or Semites, you know, the Semitic people that bring in the glory of God, and then there's the other side that kind of go another direction, okay? So then the other brother's name was Joktan, and Joktan began all these people. One of the sons of Joktan, interesting name here, look at verse 29, Ophir, Havilah, and what's that next one? Jobab. Some people believe this is Job. Job is the oldest book in the Bible. And some people believe that Job was actually the things that he knows, that because if you do the timelines and look at some of these, remember, they're living a long time. It's hard for us to imagine that. You know, 950 years? Think how much history happened in his life and interacting with people. And how did Moses hear these stories? Because, you know, he was talking to people that were pretty close to, you know, not a generation or two from being right there. Okay? So it's a possibility that Job shows up right here in the Bible. I wasn't there, just a thought. All these were the son of Joktan, and their dwelling place was from Mesha, or the Medes, as you go toward Sephar, the mountains of the east. Now these were the sons of Shem according to their families, according to their languages, and their lands according to their nations. So this is why it's called the chapter of the nations. Now we have three, or actually many nations, but three divisions. These were the families of the sons of Noah according to the genealogy, or generations, excuse me, in their nations, and from these nations were divided on the earth after the flood. Part of the problem with maps is everybody has different maps, but this might help you. BJ, can you put up that first one? And this map is kind of helpful in that when you look at it, this is going to work. You see this color, descendants of Japheth? So they're up here to the north and over this area. They come down here. Okay, here's Canaan, all right? So that's Israel. When you look at this map, here's the Mediterranean Sea. Actually, Sire is right about here, and Tyre, excuse me, Sidon and Tyre's there. And this is where they think that I think the Philistines started here and made their way here and across here, but that's another story. So Japheth, see, so that's their region, okay? Then we have Ham, all right? So they're kind of like the water people, see that? Again, the Philistines, coastal people. Then we have the descendants of Shem, okay, or the Semites, okay, Syria today, okay, and then all the way down here, Ethiopia, Arabia, Persia, all right, see all this stuff? So that's one map. Can you put up the next one? Here's another way of looking at it. So we have, this is the major area for Japheth. Those guys, so these are known as the Gentiles, okay? Then we have Ham, okay? Again, coastal people. And then we have the land of Shem, okay? Now remember, this is the area where we're going to be next week with Abraham. Abraham goes from here, makes his way up here, eventually goes down here, spends some time down here for a little bit. We'll get that next couple of weeks, but kind of see the idea, okay? Babylon, Nineveh, those areas. See, is that kind of, here's another map. This is totally confusing, this next one in some ways. Can you put the next one up real quick? Now, why do I show this? Because sometimes people have Lud here, sometimes Lud is up here. Okay? But here's a bigger, kind of a bigger view. You have Europe, you have Africa, you have Asia. Okay? And again, right here is Israel today, or back then it was called Land of Canaan. And again, you know, Abraham, we're going to see this, makes his way up all the way around, down here, hangs out for a while. There's a famine. He runs down here, but then comes back. So does that kind of help you for a little bit? You know, the Red Sea and all that kind of stuff. Kind of cool, huh? How God does this. All right. Oh, we're almost ready for dessert. I'll go faster. So, now, the whole earth had one language and one speech. Verse 1. And it came to pass as they journeyed from the east that they found a plain in the land of Shinar, or Babylon, and they dwelt there. Then they said to one another, come, let us make bricks and bake them thoroughly. And they had brick for stone, and they had asphalt for mortar. How many of you have an old King James Version? Anybody have a Kate? What's it say, verse 3? Instead of mortar, it uses the word what? Slimy, that's right, all right? You know, so we've kind of cleaned it up, and the newer version is asphalt, you know. But they had slime for mortar. What are they doing? We're seeing here man's ways. Man-made bricks. Man-made cities. And they said, come, let us, now by the way, this let us is not deity, it's man. Come, let us build ourselves a city and a tower whose top is in the heavens. And let us make a name for ourselves, lest we be scattered abroad over the face of the whole earth. What do you see here? Do you see any problems with this verse? Where's God? God said, be fruitful, multiply, right? And go, and they're saying, we don't want to go anywhere. And by the way, back up for just a moment to chapter 6 of Genesis, just for real quick. Genesis chapter 6. Part of the fall, look at verse 4. Genesis 6, 4. There were giants on the earth in those days, and also after, when the sons of God came into the daughters of men, and they bore children to them. These were, this is part, before the fall, these were mighty men who were of old, men of what? Pride. The number one sin we'll talk about on Sunday also is pride. I want to be known. I want to be known more than God. Now we're back over in Genesis chapter 11. What are they saying? Let's build a city and make a name for what? Ourselves. Lest we be scattered over all. But the Lord came down to see the city and the tower which the sons of men had built. Do you think it was a shock to God? No. He knew what was going on. Just like, do you think, you know, in Genesis, during the fall, it says in the cool of the evening during the, you know, God would come in and he would have conversation with Adam. But after the deception of Eve and the disobedience of Adam. See, women always get blamed. We can say at least she was deceived. Adam chose to be disobedient. Remember what God said? Adam, where are you? Do you think God knew that information? What was the real question? Adam, think about your life. And what do we do when we sin? We try and fix it ourselves. And what did they do? They made fig leaves for clothing. Big old nice green flexible soft fig leaves. Fig leaves, excuse me. What's the problem when we try and fix our sin? Time goes by. They're no longer green. They're no longer soft. They're brown. And you sit down and they're gone. Right? So here God is saying, Adam, where are you? Do you really know what you're doing? Let me help you. I believe God was looking down on mankind again and saying, guys, what are you doing with this building? Where are you going to go with this? What's going to happen? And the Lord came down to see the city and the tower which the sons of men had built. And the Lord said, indeed, the people are one, and they all have one language, and this is what they begin to do with their unity? Now, nothing that they purpose to do will be withheld from them. When the world becomes one without God, it's a mess. It's a mess. God wasn't intimidated by them. God cared for them. Just like God said to Adam and Eve, you can have all this except from that tree right there. From that tree. And so, he says, come. By the way, you always have people say, well, you know, in the Bible, you never see the word, you know, Trinity. Well, you don't see the word Trinity, but you sure see the definition of Trinity. Here we go. Verse 7. Come, let what? Us. Who do you think the us was? The same us it was in chapter 1, verse 26. Let us make man, you know, like us. Here they have another staff meeting. Let us, the Father, the Son, the Spirit, go down and there confuse their language that they may not understand one another's speech. Why is God doing this? Because when man comes together by himself without God, there's nothing but destruction and self-centeredness. So the Lord scattered them abroad from there over the face of all the earth, and they ceased building the city. That's good. Why? Because what was the city purpose to be? To bring a name to man. See? Hey, look how great we are. Also, it was a way, I believe, that they were trying to defend themselves, but also protect themselves. You know, if that flood ever comes again, we'll just go right up here. We can take care of ourselves. You know what? Things have not changed. How many times have you this last year tried to take care of things yourself? Remember about four years ago, there was a word called 401k? Anybody remember that? I got to take care of my retirement. Find the retirement in the Bible. It's not there. Wow, it's the American way. Well, maybe it is the American way, but is it God's way? I'm not saying that it's not possible to stop doing what you've been doing for 35 years, but when you stop doing that, do something differently. Don't die. Just use your time and your resources differently. Ask God, what do you want me to do? Last night, I had dinner with Pete from MacArthur and Susie, and Pete had just got back from leading a mission trip for a little country church, MacArthur, to Honduras. And the reason they were there is they work with a ministry, Water for, I want to say Rotonda, or I forget the name of it, Water. But what it was, 3 years ago, a couple was on a cruise ship in Honduras. A couple, they were going to retire. And while they were on the cruise ship, from what he told me, they got off and wanted to go, and got a local tour guide. He said, hey, take us to places that no one else goes to. We want to go, not on the regular tour thing. We don't go shops and trinkets. We do all that. The guy says, okay, loads them up, takes them to a part of Honduras where they got out of the car, and what they saw was little children, 3 and 4, carrying, like, water containers. And they said to the guide, well, what are they doing? He said, well, they're bringing water to their house. There's no water here. And that husband and wife said, you know, we can do something about this. They went home 3 years ago, sold their house, sold everything, and moved there to help bring water to this village. There's no retirement in the scriptures. It's just saying, hey, how can we do it differently? And so now our team was just there last week to help bring more water to a people that have no water. That is so cool. So the Lord scattered them abroad from there over the face of all the earth, and they ceased building the city. Therefore, its name is called Babel, which is close to the word, you know, to Babel. It's not really, but we use that. It kind of helps. It means to be confused, okay? So they called the city Babel because it's there that the Lord confused the language of all the earth, and it's from there the Lord scattered them abroad over the face of all the earth. Interesting, and we'll stop here. Because of God's or man's purpose for language, God had to scatter it. But then we come to the book of Acts. 40 days, actually 50 days after the resurrection. It's called Pentecost. And what did God do on Pentecost? His Spirit came like a rushing wind. And it caused language to do something that it hadn't been done since before the flood. The language that God has given since Pentecost is a language that unites people to God. It's from the Holy Spirit to give the gospel message out. That's what God wants language to do. To promote our dependence upon Him, His love for us, and encourage one another. I love going through Genesis. I hope you do too. Father, thank you for tonight. And Lord, if there are things in our lives that have caused us to maybe draw a little bit more attention to ourselves, would you correct that? Quite frankly, maybe it was wrong when we started, but would you redeem that even tonight? That we would change our hearts to whatever we're doing, that would be the end result is bring glory to you, to correct our course. And Father, may there be some men and women here that are going to begin a generation for their family to break some of the things that have been taking place over the years. We thank you for here's Abram, 6 generations from a man named Eber, who started a whole new work so the world would know how much you love us. We love you, Father. In Jesus' name we pray, amen.